Congratulations, you're listening to Podcast Rebellion.
Happy Monday, everybody. This is JUCO All-American, joined as always by Whiskey Wednesday. We are talking about the transfer portal and the gloriousness of the transfer portal. First, we're actually going to deviate from what we're drinking because it is often just me bourbon, him rum, despite the fact that his name is Whiskey Wednesday. And so we're actually going to pivot to what we've been cooking, mostly because we have fun things to talk about that we've been cooking for this week. You sent some videos to the group chat yesterday. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So, you know, this isn't anything super inventive or anything, which I feel like I would like to highlight in the future, but we did a in-law Christmas. My wife and I went to her family's place because we're going down to Mississippi for real Christmas, and did a big old seafood boil. One of the, you know, outdoor propane burner situations, huge pot, made a bunch of the jumbo crab legs and oysters and clams and shrimp and, you know, corn and sausage and potatoes. And like, man, something just feels real cool about standing over one of those big pots with the flames spilling out the sides. It's great.
Yeah. Did you, how many people were there? Cause it was a ton of food, it looked like.
We always get too much. I think it was like seven of us. We put a pretty good dent in it, but yeah. No, we got leftovers, man.
Well, also like leftovers are good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me encourage you to save any shells and make a seafood stock.
Yeah, I may be a little late on that, but something I definitely like to do.
It's funny. I did that the last couple of crawfish boils I've been at. I've been the weird guy who like puts a bunch of shells in a bag and stuff. And you would think like, oh, well, it's already been in water for a long time. You know, like what more is there? Like, incredible. I have made crawfish stock twice now off of like fully cooked crawfish shells that, you know, were part of the whole thing, and tons of flavor, tons of deliciousness. So yeah, let me encourage that. Made shrimp etouffee yesterday. I've actually never made shrimp etouffee before. I've always made crawfish, but my wife requested shrimp last night, and gosh, etouffee is one of those things that I only make, I'd say, once every 2 years or so, maybe once a year, once every 2 years. And every time I make it, I'm just like, gosh, I got to make etouffee more. Like it's so good. And, you know, it's objectively different from like gumbo and, you know, those many dishes that are kind of, you know, in the same vein, like jambalaya. Etouffee is so rice heavy, but then like the sauce is so thick and flavorful that it really like balances it well. But you know, like with a gumbo, you want rice to be like just a little sprinkling to kind of like add some texture and all that stuff to it. But yeah, I don't know. Like I just go crazy about etouffee. I can eat it up.
Yeah, you sent some pictures to one of our group chats, and man, that stuff looks crazy. I've had barely any etouffee in my life. I have had a lot more of, you know, gumbo and jambalaya and things like that. Man, it looks delicious. It almost looked like in the pictures like a Thai curry or something. I don't know.
It definitely has really, that same kind of color.
Yeah,
it's really thick. So like, That is one thing about it that, you know, at least in my opinion, you kind of know that it's etouffee from being thicker. I'm sure that there are many varied opinions about it, just like every single dish. But yeah. Speaking of, I was looking at gumbo. I was watching a few gumbo videos the other day. Because even though I make a lot of gumbo and enjoy it, and you know, people say that it's good, And I also think it's very good. I always kind of like to like refine things a bit. And so I watch to see what people are doing and then try to see if there's something I can incorporate or something like that. And this one video that I was watching, which ultimately looked like it had a really good end product, they used tomato. And I know tomato is very divisive. I don't use tomato, but I don't know what your thoughts are on tomato and gumbo.
I like it. I like it in jambalaya and gumbo. I feel like I'm more on the side that uses like tomato and seafood and stuff like that, where, you know, some other recipes are more like chicken and sausage only or whatever. But I think it's a good way to add flavor and acidity, you know, easily and quickly.
Yeah, I recognize that is a... It's a heated debate. I mean, like everything in cooking, people are like, no, that is not how you make it.
Yeah. Especially Cajun and Creole food, like an oddly, you know, divisive subject.
Yeah, yeah. What's not a divisive subject is that Ole Miss has been successful in the transfer portal.
I should say so, yeah. How many times so far this offseason have you thought like, oh, there's no way that Ole Miss is going to pull it off with this guy? Right. And then they do. It's happened like 10 times.
Yeah, like all the guys who came back, you know, that was a major part. And then, the portal has been crazy. Like Ole Miss will be linked to a guy. And then, like, there seems to be some interest on both sides. And then, like, seemingly too much time passes. And then that guy commits to Ole Miss.
Yeah, let's talk about some of them. Yeah. who's like the first big domino since we last casted pods?
I think had Gerquan Scott, had he committed when we last podded?
Close to that time. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he had. So let's pretend he hasn't and just hope that if we had, then people don't go back and listen again. 40 career starts at Southern Miss. I think that he has played like all three positions, that being center, guard, and tackle, at the collegiate level. He is seen more as an interior offensive lineman, be it center or guard. But yeah, huge piece. I mean, look, if Ole Miss does return, Jaden Williams, Micah Pettis, Caleb Warren, and Jeremy James, then in theory, it only has one hole to plug, and that being an interior offensive lineman, which now it has. I think that, you know, we all want to see a number of offensive linemen come out of the portal, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But look, this was a must-have in order to field a line that you feel confident about, and they got it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the easiest comparison to draw is with Quincy McGee, because that's kind of who he is most likely to replace. And I don't know how they compare in terms of physical attributes, but he's definitely a much more seasoned player at the D1 level. McGee, I think, really just had one year where he was like a primary starter at the D1 level before coming into Ole Miss. And, you know, having a lot of starts under your belt is really good for an offensive lineman. Having some positional versatility, like you said, is really important. And yeah, I think it's very good that we went ahead and knocked one of those out. I can't remember if we talked about it last time, but last offseason we got off to such a slow start in the portal, and I don't know how much of that was due to kind of Lane Kiffin flirting with Auburn and whatnot, but
and not having it
definitely changed our strategy. Yeah. That too. Yeah, we definitely changed our strategy to be a lot more aggressive with like the first wave of portal guys. And, you know, he's an example of that.
Yeah. So the other offensive player, the only other offensive player so far, was Juice Wells, who is a wide receiver from South Carolina. He was at James Madison before he was at South Carolina. And yeah, so this past season, he played in two games. He got injured against Georgia. There's some debate about how injured he was, like how many weeks he missed because he was actually hurt and how many weeks he missed because he wanted to still have eligibility for another year so that he could transfer and up his draft stock. I don't really care.
I don't either.
No. Like, so his first year at South Carolina, he was crazy good. He had almost 900 yards receiving. I don't have his stats up. Actually, I can pull that up while I'm talking about it. But yeah, almost 900 yards receiving. He had 8 touchdowns. And against, let's talk about just a few games. Obviously, like, he had some games that, you know, weren't as good at South Carolina. But the fewest passes that he caught in a game was 2 in his breakout season. But let's talk about his games against number 8 Clemson, number 5 Tennessee, and number 16 Arkansas. Because remember, Arkansas was good in 2022. Against Arkansas, he had 8 catches for 189 yards and a touchdown. Against Tennessee, he had 11 catches for 177 yards. And against Clemson, he had 9 catches for 131 yards and 2 touchdowns. So those are pretty good games against top 10 teams, right?
Yeah. You know, if you're going to be a little streaky as a wide receiver, you might as well just have your biggest blow-up games against the best teams you play, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've only seen his highlight film. You know, I haven't gone back and like watched every game. So I don't know, you know, Florida destroyed South Carolina that year. They won 38-6. Juice Wells had 2 catches for 16 yards. I have no idea if just like he was overmatched or their offensive line was overmatched or what it was. But look, to get a guy from his highlights, And I watched a South Carolina game last year, but I don't really remember him. Anyway, from his highlights, he is like a tremendous playmaker. He's the type of guy that you want to get the ball in space and he'll do things. And he's not little. He's listed at 6'1", 210. He is shifty. He knows what to do with the ball. He will, you know, juke people out. But it's not like he's, like, you know, so tiny that he can be taken out of the game if he's, you know, if they have, like, press coverage and that sort of thing. Like, no, he's just a really good player. And with Trey Harris on the field and Jordan Watkins on the field and Deion Smith potentially on the field and Aiden Williams potentially on the field. Gosh, wow. Aiden Williams potentially on the field. Like, I mean, it's just going to be really interesting to see how it all shakes out. You know, we've talked about how Lane Kiffin, like, plays 3 wide receivers and then nobody else. And maybe he'll continue to. But he will have a lot of options of players that are promising. And it'll be interesting to see how he makes it work.
Yeah. But, yeah, Wells, phenomenal pickup. He was preseason, I think, first team All-SEC. This season was projected first team.
And he finished, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but he finished last season second team All-SEC.
Yeah. So, I mean, super highly thought of. And then, yeah, I think he has a complementary skill set to Trey Harris as well. He's a little bit more of a possession guy, a catch and run guy, whereas Harris, you know, tends to out-muscle, out-jump people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, between the two of those guys, just two dominant guys with very different skill sets, which is really great to have.
Yeah, I will say, like, you're right. I'm not trying to discount that. But from watching his highlight film, He did more of the like jockey for position with the ball in the air, fight for it, come down with it kind of stuff than I expected from him before I watched the video.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, just great get. And, you know, should help the Rebels replace Dayton Wade pretty well. Okay, switching over to the defensive side. So, I think, how could we not talk about Princely Umanmielen? Defensive end from Florida, finished this season, second team All-SEC. And, yeah, again, I watched his highlights when we got him, and he's just a pure speed rusher that Ole Miss hasn't really had. Cedric Johnson was, you know, a very good defensive end, and I think that he'll be, you know, drafted. But he's not that guy who is the, like, terrorizing sack guy. And at times he could do that. It's not like he, you know, wasn't capable of it, but that's not really just, like, his exclusive game. And that is what Princely Umanmielen does. He goes after the quarterback, and, like, I think he only had 7.5 sacks this year, 14 tackles for loss, but tons of hurries and just disruptive play. And he doesn't only have the, like, burst to get around a tackle on the outside or something. Like, he can bull rush. He uses his hands well. He spins. Like, he has a lot of stuff going for him.
Yeah, yeah. I saw in his highlights, he's able to kind of get offensive tackles to drift wide and then come inside on them. Like, he's got some moves, and he's also not undersized. You said he's a speed rusher, and he definitely is, but yeah, it's 6'4 or 6'5, 250, 260, whatever. He's pretty decent sized. And yeah, I think he's closer to Sam Williams in terms of, like, size and skill set than Cedric Johnson, which is, I mean, pretty cool to be able to very possibly upgrade at that position.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Princey Umanmielen is not the only possible upgrade. So Tyler Barron was the starting, I guess we would say, rush end at Tennessee this past season. And he had 6 sacks. I watched his film, and he's not as disruptive as Umanmielen, but he's really good. I think it's going to be strange to see what the coaches do with him, Ivy, and Umanmielen, and then any other possible defensive ends that they find in the portal or that are on the team now and step up. Because, like, obviously you can't start 3 defensive ends. And so which of those doesn't play? Like, is Barron just Umanmielen's backup? That would be weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so looking at the depth chart, they don't have any other defensive ends with any experience. And they also don't have guys coming in with a lot of, you know, recruiting stars behind their name either. Like, the main backups we have at defensive end right now are a couple of guys that we found really, really late in the 2023 cycle in Chamberlain Campbell and DJ Holmes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they both have upside. They both, you know, Holmes was, I think, the nation's leader in sacks in high school or something like that, but a little undersized. Mm-hmm. And then Chamberlain mm-hmm. Campbell has, like, a huge frame, very inexperienced though. But yeah, you got to think maybe they're not quite ready in year 2 to be, like, major, major rotational players. And so I think having 3 defensive ends, like, you're going to have to rotate them pretty often to, you know, make it through the rigors of the football season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, no matter who starts, they're all going to play a ton. And Ole Miss probably still needs to do something like find an Isaac Ukwu in the portal, you know, like a guy who's going to come in and be a backup who's quite good when you need him, but is not, like, a star player that you have to spend a ton of NIL on.
Exactly.
Let's see. Tamarian McDonald, safety from Tennessee, committed essentially with Tyler Barron on the same day. I think that it came out at different times, but Yeah, he was a rotational safety at Tennessee, was not a starting safety, but played a good bit and will be a nice piece to have on the team. Probably won't start at Ole Miss either, but yeah, you know, had 40 tackles this past year, 55 the year before. So he was playing a lot.
Yeah, and you know, you think of these pickups in terms of the guys that they are likely replacing. Mm-hmm. So Ole Miss has already taken three safeties in the portal, and in terms of maybe expected contribution, the closest guy to compare him to would be Teha Young, who didn't play a ton. I'd probably expect McDonald to play a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, a super experienced guy who won't necessarily be a starter, but will sub in with very little drop off, especially in terms of just being like assignment sound and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you say it like that, like, I guess the Dijon Anthony is probably like Lewis Moore or Key Lawrence, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So if we think about it, Trey Washington, Lewis Moore, Key Lawrence, potentially John Saunders. John Saunders hasn't said either way, right? Whether he's coming back or not.
No, I certainly would expect him to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. So adding those three is certainly a net positive before, you know, even thinking about that. If John Saunders doesn't come back, you end up with four safeties instead of essentially three, which is what Ole Miss basically had by the end of the year. Because Aishim Young was no longer playing. Teha Young was not playing that much. Taylor Groves didn't play much. So, yeah. Yeah. Lots of guys in the defensive backfield. It's possible that they use a guy at corner somehow, or like a nickel back or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I had thought about the possibility of John Saunders moving back to cornerback, which I think he played a good bit of at Miami, Ohio before coming to Ole Miss.
He did. He was maybe the coaches didn't expect him, but everyone who was just following expected him to play corner when he got to Ole Miss. And so
we hadn't found Zamari Walton yet either. So he was kind of like penciled in as a likely starter, maybe even.
Yeah. Gosh, we need to find another Zamari Walton, man.
Yeah. He was, against some elite competition, you know, his ceiling showed a little bit perhaps, but like what a reliable dude, you know, that we got at the last second.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, if we're worried about Malik Nabers and that sort of thing, like, okay, one, maybe you shouldn't have to cover Malik Nabers for that long, you know?
Also,
like at some point it's just, if you're against the first round receiver, sometimes you're just going to lose that matchup and you have to be okay with that. Totally. Okay. So yeah, I think we've actually covered everybody. Key Lawrence. It's funny not to talk about him. So I'll just say really quickly about him. Starting safety at Oklahoma, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Had 44 tackles this year, two picks, three passes defended, and a forced fumble.
Yeah.
He's originally from Nashville. Another, like, he may not be a, you know, spectacular starter in the SEC, but he is going to be a big piece in, you know, making the defense work, and especially like work in the third and fourth quarter. You know, I think that there are a number of games this year that Ole Miss won because it had guys it could go to who were fresh and good on defense.
Yeah, that's been our downfall a lot of years, and it was not this year.
No.
Key Lawrence, one, you know, factoid to add about him. He was a top 100 overall recruit in, I think, the 2020 class, maybe, whenever he came out of high school.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a big, big, big recruit.
Cool. Okay, speaking of big recruits, gosh, I just, look at that. Look at that seamless transition. Speaking of big recruits, the biggest recruit, as of recording this podcast, still an unknown, Walter Nolan, the number one transfer portal player overall. Also, he was the number two, I think, recruit in his class in high school. He's a defensive tackle, transferring from A&M somewhere. And we actually talked about him a little bit on the podcast last week, just as sort of like a, wouldn't it be wild? And now it's a little less wild because he was in Oxford this past weekend. Some good vibes out of that visit. Still not, you know, committed. We don't know whether that will happen or when it will happen. But if it does, then Ole Miss goes from, you know, a pretty good defensive line this past season that, you know, was good at times and could get it done, but got steamrolled by Georgia, to having a potential starting four of Princely Umanmielen, Walter Nolan, J.J. Pegues, Jared Ivey, with Tyler Barron coming off the bench, Xavier Harris coming off the bench, Joshua Harris coming off the bench. Like, that can wreck a lot of people. You know, Georgia might still succeed. They did win 52-17. But, like, there are teams that are on Ole Miss's schedule, and I don't just mean, like, the obvious non-conference games. There are teams on Ole Miss's schedule that those four guys would essentially beat.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a defensive line that we would compare to, you know, the 2014 Ole Miss defensive line, the 2008 Ole Miss defensive line, and maybe compare favorably to, you know, like they may not have a Rob Kimdichie, but the, like you said, the quality of the first three or four backups, like insane. Something we haven't seen.
No. And I mean, you know, we're not used to a situation where, like, when the defense steps on the field and, you know, plays a couple of series, then it's just like, oh, okay, never mind. You know, like, when it's just like, well, this is going to be a nightmare for the opposing team for the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very possible. It's possible even without Walter Nolan. But if Walter Nolan does commit to Ole Miss, like, it puts the team in a really crazy spot defensively and takes pressure off those corners that, you know, Ole Miss needs to find in the portal.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so one other thing. Nereal White, before we talk about positions that we need, Nereal White tweeted very briefly a decommitment this evening. We're recording this on Sunday. And then he deleted the tweet. But I don't know. A little strange considering signing day is Wednesday.
Yeah, I would say it's a little strange. I don't know. I don't know a ton about Nereal White, but it just seemed like his recruitment has had a little bit of drama throughout. I don't know. So hopefully we can pull him back in. It's been a decent crop of wide receivers in the Mississippi high school class this year. And Ole Miss only has a commitment from him. So they had commitments from San Francisco McGee and Jeremy Scott, two of the lower rated receivers in that group. But then we had kind of a mutual parting of ways with both of those guys, and that left only Nereal White. You know, we kind of missed out on J.J. Harrell, who's committed to State, missed out on Braylon Burnside, who's likely to commit to State.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'd be a shame to lose White, but also we have such a loaded group of upperclassmen at wide receiver. Like, we have time to figure it out if he were to
commit. Yeah, there's like a 5% chance that he would have made an impact on the team this year. Maybe less than that. Maybe like a 2% chance. I'm leaving it open because you never know when a guy just like shows up and is like, oh, that guy's really incredible. And so, you know, then you figure out something to do. But yeah, it would be very odd for him to show up on campus and suddenly make a huge impact. But yeah, I'd like to retain the guy. Like, I hope that he signs with Ole Miss. It It does feel a little bit, and we can talk about this a little bit, it does feel a little bit like there is an impetus to just say, like, let's go to the playoff and win it this year, right? And I'm not saying win it like Ole Miss is now the favorite or something like that. But like, it does feel like this is some sort of all out push to, like, Jackson Dart's in his final year. This is the last year we'll have Quinshon Judkins. The offensive line will have to be fully rebuilt after this season's over. Like, there are plenty of defenders who will be gone, and, you know, all these wide receivers now will all be gone, other than Aiden Williams and I guess Deion Smith. Does it feel a little weird to just be like, let's do it and go for it, instead of like, let's try to find, you know, sophomores in the portal who can be helpful long term and all that?
Yeah, it's definitely the first time I can think of where Ole Miss, or really any team that I've paid attention to, has been in this situation where it's like, okay, this is the year, perfect storm, put all your chips in, let's do it. But it's interesting to think, I don't know, we always think about, you and I especially, like, think about Ole Miss in football in general in terms of, like, program building, you know?
Yeah.
How we prepare for this year and the next year and the next. It's like, well, this is pretty much all for 2024. Yeah. And so something that's going to be funny is, like, mentally preparing Ole Miss fans to go 6-6 in 2025. And to be okay with that.
Yeah. Next offseason should be really fun, though, to, like, pay attention to. You know, there will be tons of money rolling off the books. And, you know, where does that go? What does Ole Miss do? Does Ole Miss do again of, like, let's get a bunch of guys who are good and will only be here 1 year? Or is there like a, okay, you know, let's use this year to break in Walker Howard and we'll, you know, find some pieces that can grow with him, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. I just came up with a crazy conspiracy theory. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, of course.
So, you know how Walker Jones, the Grove Collective, was one of the few representatives or, you know, experts or whatever that was called in front of Congress to talk about NIL and, you know, kind of the current situation in college sports. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
My conspiracy theory. Our insiders in the Grove Collective know that something is coming down the pipeline legislatively or with the NCAA or something that will change the dynamics, like the ever escalating salary cap that teams are having to figure out. Something is coming to regulate that, to put some sort of reasonable limit on it. And they're
so
like,
spend it all now, spend it all now.
Year. Spend it now, smoke them if you got them. Because next year the cap is going to be 50,000 per player or something.
That, I mean, you know, let's do it. That's fine. You heard it here first. Okay, so before we go, there are a couple of positions that Ole Miss still needs to fill, and I don't really know. Well, maybe you do. Offensive line and corner. It seems like names are not really popping for those things right now. And obviously, like, there's still time actually for people to get in the portal this window. I've heard, you know, speculation that players will get in after bowls are over. And then there's a second window after the spring and all that. But do you know anything about offensive linemen or corners that have been linked and are still in the portal?
I sure don't. Yeah, I don't know if we discussed this, but the biggest name on the offensive line board that we were talking about, Carter Smith, the left tackle for Indiana, I'm pretty sure Ole Miss thought they had him.
Yeah.
And then he went on a visit to Florida State, and then it seemed like maybe he was going to Florida State. And then he just got out of the portal, staying at Indiana.
Indiana. Like,
yeah.
Dude, what?
Who's going to win 3 games next year? Carter Smith's all in, baby. But yeah, I think that just kind of left the coaches scrambling for answers and scrambling for names, and we don't really have another one yet.
Yeah. Yeah, in corner, really nothing. No names that I have seen linked, or that anyone has told me about. I don't know. I mean, Ole Miss doesn't really have, I guess, dire needs at either. It's not as if Ole Miss has no players who could start there. But at corner, there is unproven starting, though, like, some promising starters, two promising starters with the transfer. But then no depth of any significance that, like, has played, I should say. There are some players who are on the team, and some who, you know, were thought of with some degree of notoriety, but really need at least one more corner who's just, like, very proven. And it doesn't have to be, like, a lockdown elite guy. You know, we don't have to find another DeAndre Prince, but, like, finding a guy who will be fine is really would really be helpful at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Graves is kind of maybe a penciled in starter at this point. He was kind of the third corner at the end of the year, and really looking at snap counts, he played almost exactly as much as Zamari Walton down the stretch.
Yeah.
So yeah, you pencil him in, but after that, it's like, well, I don't know. Then we have a JUCO guy coming in that's supposed to be good. We have the guy that we pulled from Illinois, right?
Yeah, Taz Nicholson.
And then after that, it gets pretty, I don't know, we get a little bit hard up. We have AJ Brown, Ahmad Brown, who was a true freshman this year, who played a little bit. Surely he's in line for a lot more minutes, but yeah. I don't know if they think of him as an SEC starter yet.
Yeah.
I guess we'll
DeMarco Williams is in the portal, right? So.
Yeah. You wonder if we'll make a play to keep him or. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. So if this is it, I mean, okay, let's engage in a hypothetical where Ole Miss gets Nolan. Okay. Walter Nolan commits to Ole Miss, and all the other guys who are currently committed enroll at Ole Miss. There's no like flipping or anything like that. And Ole Miss finds a few players who are adequate backups, but not like, you know, any more starters in the portal. Do you feel like this team is a playoff contender?
Absolutely. I think they'd be favored to make the playoffs for sure. But it's an interesting thing because if Ole Miss is as good as we think they might be, then they have a three-game season, kind of. Oklahoma, LSU, Florida. We don't play Alabama.
Lose to Georgia.
Yeah, probably lose to Georgia, even though it's at home, although they could probably be decently close this year. But yeah, that requires you to go 2-0 probably against LSU and Oklahoma. I feel like if you lose one of those games, then you're sitting at like number 12 and you just don't know.
Yeah. 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 I think that obviously, like, it's funny for me to say, is it a playoff contender? I guess what I mean, instead of saying that, is does that team make the playoff? And I know that it's like, well, Ole Miss would have made the playoff this year. Like, of course, you know, the team next year seems like it'll be better. Like, yes, it seems like the team next year will be better, but one, it may not be. and then also two, like, Ole Miss won a whole bunch of close games this year. And, you know, if Ole Miss had lost to Arkansas or LSU or A&M or whoever, like, then it's just another 9-3 year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, easily Ole Miss could trip up. Like, you mentioned Florida. We shouldn't lose to Florida. Florida is not even something we should be talking about losing to, but, like, we could.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Could lose to South Carolina. I don't know. But yeah, you think, I don't know. When I think back, like, what is probably the best Ole Miss team that I have seen in my lifetime? My gut is to say 2015. And then I think like, oh, you mean the team that lost to Memphis? Like,
right.
Like, stuff happens.
It is funny to think about because, like, so admittedly, Lane Kiffin lost to a 6-6 Auburn team that was coached by Brian Harsin and was not good. But having said that, Lane Kiffin has not proven to be a coach who loses a head scratcher every year. And it's funny, you know, in my head, I've thought back to some of these seasons and said, like, what is the record with Lane Kiffin and Pete Golding, you know, as head coach and defensive coordinator of these teams? And with some of those, like the year that Ole Miss lost to Memphis, 2015, like, maybe Lane Kiffin doesn't beat Bama, you know? So, like, would you rather beat Bama and lose to Memphis or lose to Memphis and beat Bama? Like, probably lose to Memphis and beat Bama, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, not losing these games that you're just like, what happened? How did Ole Miss possibly lose this? Would have been nice. I can tell you for sure that the final Hugh Freeze 5-7 year does not happen with Lane Kiffin at quarterback or at head coach.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay, so I think that'll be it. And we will have definitely more to talk about. We will podcast at some point about Walter Nolan, whichever direction he goes, as well as other players in the portal coming out. And then we still have to do a pod about the Penn State game, the Peach Bowl that's actually happening. And we can't forget about.
Yeah. I'm way more excited about the future now, but we still do have to play number 10, 11 Penn State.
A very meaningful game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you all soon.